I'm Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. And I get the good fortune to introduce Paula tonight. I met Paula in this room, I don't know, about 3.5 years ago now. And we have been very good friends ever since. And what I've learned about Paula in these past 3.5 years is she's one of the most honest people I know. She's open and she's willing. She works a wonderful program. She's old school AA, and I really love that. And so we have a lot in common to talk about. I've heard her story a couple of times, and it changes. So we'll get to see what she says tonight. But I love this lady right here, and you're in for a treat.
I'm Paula, and I am an alcoholic.
Oof, this is my least favorite thing to do.
I'm supposed to tell you my experience, strength, and hope, what happened, what it was like, and what it's like today. I've been doing this many years, but I don't know, I have a lot of anxiety. But my hope is that that whatever comes out is what God has planned to help someone in these rooms tonight. Because the ego tells you one thing, but we all know that's the real purpose of why we're here, right? As one alcoholic here to help another. So my sobriety date is July 19th, 1995, and for that I'm grateful. I just celebrated 23 years last month. Before I get caught up in this story of mine, I want to see a hand of my home group members, Hillside Group, right now, just to show y'all the support I have. It's like, oh my God, it's like, you just don't find that just anywhere. And if you don't feel like you have the best home group in the state of Georgia, you probably need to find another home group. I believe that. That was passed on to me early on in Rome, Georgia, and we have group conscience. We have the spirit of rotation. We have positions. We have guidelines by the AA service manual that you have a little time in sobriety before you chair a meeting, and that we pass on to others. We have coffee makers, and we meet 3 times a week, and I'm usually there every Tuesday and most Friday women's meeting. And so basically, I was born September 21st, coming up on a birthday. My twin sister's right here. Raise your hand. I might tell a little bit of her story. We get to share this sobriety thing together, which is a gift because she's got double-digit sobriety, too. So basically, I was born in Rome. We grew up in the big city of Cartersville, Georgia, Bartow. So you'll hear some of that come out tonight. And, you know, I come from a lot of the same homes we hear about in AA. I come from that dysfunctional alcoholic home. But, you know, I've met a lot of AAs that come from normal homes. So sometimes this disease skips generations. Basically, my father's a Vietnam vet, alcoholic, and my early memories, my mom didn't know she was pregnant with twins. They heard one heartbeat. 7 minutes later, Carla come out. And early on, those memories of, I'll try not to do a fifth step up here, but what I'm not in charge of that because I've done all those with a sponsor, but you know, I come from that violent upbringing the first few years, and I've heard a lot of people share about that, and they taught me in treatment and early on that I had to quit playing that victim, you know. But the early memories was fear and hate, and but I always knew it wasn't right. I never thought that shit was normal, you know. And at 6 years of age, we were happy our mom was going to divorce our dad. And so we lived in Cartersville most of our life. Early on, I found sports, softball, and basketball as an outlet. I was with the oldest sister when the fights began, and my father beat my mother. I would sort of disappear. I was that typical video you hear about or read about. And Carla was the one to get in the middle. But we had great grandparents, grandmothers, who were strong women, and they helped raise us with my mother. Today, looking back on all that, it's just a miracle. You know, I judged my mother for many years in this program, but I don't think I could have done what she did. It was just amazing. Back then, we always had big Christmases and big birthdays. You know, you did the layaway, and she worked 2 and 3 jobs. And so the early memories of being less than and not having what those school friends had, you know. And then I found sports, and that was my outlet. I was pretty good as a short basketball player, and my claim to fame is I wanted to be a famous basketball star. I didn't get the height as some people did, but I don't know. That was my outlet, and I was the first lady at Cartersville High to get the first 3-pointer on record, so that was as high as I got. But, you know, I loved it, just like I loved alcohol and drugs, you know. But then I found alcohol and drugs at age 12, 13, and, you know, as the innocent, you go hang out with guys you're not supposed to be with, and you drink some Budweiser's, and 3 or 4 beers later, you know, I remember the next day, part of that night was a blackout. I had a partial blackout the first time I had alcohol in my system. And for me, you know, alcohol is the begin and end, but drugs is a part of my story, and I'd have never done any of them if I hadn't have been drinking, but it's like I'm all or nothing, you know. So I tried the pot. I started smoking, and I was told I looked just like my father, and I had that attitude, I'm going to show you too, you know. And I was always that rebellious child. At school, I was one way, and at home, I was another. But I'm the oldest of the twins, but I'm really the biggest baby of Carl and I. You know, we would come home from school and she would fix me lunch, you know, and, you know, I was always just a big baby. I'd cry and I'd get my way. And early on, I have vague memories of holding my breath as a baby and my mother blowing in my face, you know. I actually have a few memories of that. So Carl and I fought a lot growing up, and that was normal, you know, but nobody messed with us because they had to deal with the other if they did. But, you know, we didn't go around bullying people, but I don't know how my mother survived us, really. She broke my nose at age 15. I had to have surgery, you know. And, I mean, she literally punched me in the nose, you know. She did an uppercut. And then a week later, she had to have surgery, and I'm laughing at her on her bladder, you know. So I'm telling her story more than I should. But, I mean, because she's that other part of me. You know, she's my twin. And my oldest sister about killed us because we wouldn't get out the door to go to school, and she had to get us to school. And I remember one time she come after me with a broom, you know. And that didn't still work too good with me because I was always a night owl. And, you know, I thought I would quit school and do what? I have no idea. But once I discovered pot and drinking on the weekends and then acid and whatever else I could get my hands on, you know, that was my mission, to get high as I could every day. And that I did. And it was a Sunday night. We were going to have to go to school the next morning. Who wants to do that, right? So my friend and I, we hitched a ride to Ackworth down here, and we got a truck driver to me, and it was an experienced runaway girl that we didn't know, and Tara and Greg, and we said we got left here. We're from Florida, and I had my little purse with $2 in it and a little knife, and we said we need to get back to Florida. So my cousin had ran away, and I thought that sounded quite interesting, but she made it a long way. So I thought, well, I'll try that, you know, and I didn't want to go to school. So we got a truck driver from Highway 92, and we headed off, and I woke up with Greg and the other girl having sex at my head. I'm like, what are you doing, you know? And it was just crazy. And so we made it down to Jacksonville, Florida, and we walked in swampland. It's a thousand wonders we didn't get alligator bit. We ended up in Phillips Highway, and found out that that's one of the worst prostitute drug addict areas you could be in. And then the police barged in. They seen us young girls walking, and Tara had kind of Later did I know Tara was dealing with early schizophrenia, my friend growing up. I thought she was just hearing voices from, like, acid and Robitussin. Because that's what you do when you can't buy booze and you learn that you chug Robitussin. And, you know, literally, that is true. Later I learned in psychology that was the beginning stages of her schizophrenia. And we didn't know that at the time. And that Tara is the one I started it all with, and she ended up being in Northwest Regional for 10 years before they kicked her out, and she never got this program, but she had more than mental illness, I think, and the drugs just tipped her on over with the disease of addiction. But so I remember the police barged in at this hotel, and I've often thought about this the last couple years more than I ever did before. Because this man, he kept talking about 4 months. This truck driver, blonde hair, beard. You know, he seemed old, but he was probably 40 then. And he kept saying about 4 months sober. And, you know, most non-alcoholics don't talk about being sober for 4 months. And he had a bottle of vodka. He was going to get ready to tie one on with us, which we were happy about. And the police obviously didn't like what they saw, and they barged in and they put him in the back of the police car, and he already had a little bit in him, and so he was literally trying to kick out the back of the police car with his bare feet. And the cop called for backup, and all these police come, and I'm like 15, 16 years old, and I'm really scared to death, but I wouldn't tell the girls or the guy that. And they got him out of the car, and somehow he run to the side of the building, and they're like, let's go. So we run in the hotel room and go the other way, and end up sleeping under a building, and we could hear him come by, and we heard a gunshot. So to this day, I don't know if this man got killed or not. And for some reason, the last couple years, that's crossed my mind more than it did before. And I hope he didn't die. I know I'm not responsible for that, but I would hate to know that he did. But obviously, I might meet him in an AA meeting one day. Who knows? So then the rest of the week rocked on. We went to St. Augustine, met a guy from Connecticut, stayed at his apartment. Tara took off, and I don't know what I thought I was going to do, make it big in Florida, I don't know, but, you know, I wanted to go home, and I was scared, but that pride and ego would not let me call for help. My uncle was a truck driver, my mom got with Tara's mom, they started putting our pictures in all the truck stops, and Tara ended up calling her grandmother, and they found out where we were, and they brought us back. And today, as I've gotten older and I hear about this sex trafficking, and I'm lucky to be alive, just going through that one thing, because about 3 years ago, a gal from Rockmart, y'all may have heard about her, they found her cut up down in Florida. I took her to her first AA meeting in Rome, and she didn't get this program. So I know that I'm one drink away, no matter how long I'm sober. And I hope if I don't get any message across tonight that you know that I believe that. That's why I keep coming back to AA, doing the uncomfortable, because I'm afraid not to. So rocked on, I didn't get sober then. My mother put me in a straight program where they led you around by the belt loop. She had a job at Lockheed, so she had good insurance. But that planted the seed, and then a few years later, I started going to jail. And I got minor in consumptions, I got theft by taking, and I got 2 DUIs by the time I was 19 years old. So the seed was planted about alcohol and drugs. I was forever going to wake up and be somebody. You know, my disease, very short-lived. I was pretty pissed when I got here. I really wanted 10 more years of drinking. But God and that probation officer knew that I probably wouldn't make it, you know, because I was a blackout drinker and 10 foot tall and bulletproof. And, you know, fought and acted crazy. And I remember blacking out and coming to and all in one day at a hotel and throwing up and drinking again and knowing that that probably wasn't quite right. But that's how my disease, I believe I was born an alcoholic and I was just waiting to happen. I feel like my threshold was down here, and some of my growing up friends maybe had a threshold up here, but that's just the way it played out. I've got alcoholism and drug addiction on both sides of my family, real heavily. Lots of cousins in and out of prison, and I was headed that way. So then this probation officer said, you can go to treatment or jail, because I broke my probation by getting another minor in consumption. And, you know, you back an alcoholic in a corner and they're going to find a way. So treatment sounded better than jail, because I'd already been to jail a couple times. And I was in the old Bartow jail, and it scared me to death. There was a murderer in there. They taught me how to play Yahtzee on the floor. But yet a gal snuck in crank and I snorted it, you know. But I said that honest prayer in that jail cell on that metal bunk. Oh, my dad was in jail with me. He's a town drunk, so I begged him to. They always, back in those days when he was drinking, they would just put him on runaround every time he'd go into Cartersville Bartow jail. And I asked him to please go get me a pillow. So here's the pillow he brought me. You know, the blimpy sandwiches they make out of plastic? People blow those up and make balloons out of them, and they stuff them in a T-shirt. And that was my pillow. And I thought, my God, you know. I just couldn't believe it, and I had a little awakening in there. And I just knew I was going to prison, and a lot of those gals. I chose 2 days over jail instead of 40 hours of community service, because I couldn't really stay sober to go to community service. And all those bright hoodlums I hung out with said, just go get you 2 days in, you'll be fine. So I stayed up for days, hoping I'd sleep through it. It didn't work. But that's when I asked God, this God that I really didn't know much about, other than it was a get you God, and that if you please get me out of here, I won't drink anymore. I knew that drinking was a problem. And my mother picked me up, and I convinced her to go through McCoy's Package Store on Castle Road or Tennessee Street on the way home, because I had to have a six-pack, and she bought me a six-pack. So then, you know, I was hanging out at Bartow Lodge with my friend Tina and these other people inspiring to have great lives in Cartersville. And, you know, I didn't know that you could have a life without getting high every day. Who wanted to do that, you know? And my sister, you know, Carla could kind of use a little bit, and other people I knew, and they could function, but I never could do that. I had a couple jobs. They were short-lived, but as a young woman, you know where to go. You can get whatever you want and then wake up with guilt and shame about where you are and what you've been up to. So then the treatment, it really, I had a spiritual experience over at RTU. That was in 1992 of May. And luckily they had a bed available, and my mother had $50. Because back then you could find some affordable treatment compared to like today, which is amazing to me. Because like if it was left up to high dollars in insurance for me, I maybe would have never gotten sober, you know. I don't come from a family with loads of money to pay my way. But my mother had $50, and after the 10 days in detox, they had a bed available. I was one of the youngest ones. And in detox, you go and smoke outside with the psych people. And so basically when I prayed that prayer in jail, 2 months later I ended up in treatment. I'm a little ADHD, whatever. But I come from AA that I don't take anything unless I have to. But some of us do need outside support. I don't want you to think I don't believe in that. I do. But for me, I've always been able to do it more or less with just therapy and one-on-one and sponsorship and without the medications. But basically, a light went off in treatment, and I had that spiritual experience that few people have, where it was a real spiritual experience. It scared me to death. It was like this force went in and out of my body. A black lady had taught me how to pray. Because the few days I'd been in there, I thought, well, maybe if this thing does work for me, all of them say you got to have this higher power thing, and I don't really have this, and either I'm going to try this or die. Because, one time some friends, I was starting to have a seizure in my sleep on my back. That had to happen not long before I went to treatment. So I know that I was places I shouldn't be, and I was headed to prison or early death. But, I didn't care about anything. Do y'all know what that's about, not caring? I didn't care for you or me. But somewhere along that way, God helped me realize through that treatment center that I was worth saving. Didn't know it at the time. But started with Loretta, the black gal who taught me how to pray, and I had that experience. But I knew it was all a show, and just get them off my back and get through these 30 days. I would go home and make a life for myself. And little did I know that was not the path it was going to be. I ended up, my friend come in there after me. Why she did to this day, I have no idea. She about got kicked out. It was a using friend of mine, Tina. And she found out about the halfway house in Rome, the Star House, when they had it for women. And I got home, I didn't get that job back like I thought I would. I had failed a drug test, so imagine that. Why they wouldn't want to have me back at Enforcer in the big city of Emerson, Georgia. And so I went to Star House. She interviewed me on the phone. I had enough of that few days of sobriety. I really thought I wanted to try this thing, but I knew it probably wouldn't work. But I went over there, and Nora was an old Al-Anon, and she took me in. The first week, Tina and I went and got high. Back in the day, Cowboys or whatever, we went there, and they were having a good time. And I was like, this AA has screwed up my drinking, Because it's like, she was having such a good time, and I just couldn't do it, even though I wanted to. And I went back, and I couldn't be honest about it, and she left treatment. She left the halfway house. It was a six-month program. Because if I'd have been honest, they would have kicked me out. So I just went and picked up my white chip somewhere else and just pretended until I graduated in 6 months, and I went back and I made amends to her. But I almost left several times, but we had to be up, and we had chores. We had to have our bed made, and we had a big house there. It was like 12 of us. We had to go to AA 4 days a week. You had to get a job. Imagine that. And then you paid like 30% of your paycheck. So it was very strict. And the women had it easier than the men because they would carry us around. And in Rome, they have the bus system. So the guys had to do it on their own. And early on, I had started thinking before I got sober that I might like women a little bit. And I thought, boy, you have lost your mind now. Because I knew some people drinking, and that one friend that she had a girlfriend, and so I just turned that over to this higher power I didn't understand, and because where I'm from, gay is not cool, and I labeled that today, but I believe love is love, and we're all on this scale, and it doesn't matter. Some of us lean towards more this way than this way, and part of my sobriety is learning who I am and what I am, and I've liked women for many years, and that's never changed. It could change tomorrow, but I doubt it. My good friend Weldon's here tonight. He's a good friend of mine, and we just have this connection, and he's back in the program. He's here to support me, and so I'm not one of those gay men hater by no means. I like guys, but it's like early on, I don't know if I was born that way or whatever, but it was another layer for me that at 3 years of sobriety, I went out and got drunk, and I didn't want to tell my mom and my family because where I come from, that is not cool. This is 2018 now. This was the early 90s. And And I didn't want to be wrong about it either. And after 3 years, I had finished the Star House. I got in my first relationship, and I wanted out of that relationship. It was with an old-timer. You better be careful. You might get 13th step. But I was a willing participant, I'm here to tell you. And it taught me a lot. But what I did learn is how to stay sober no matter what. But what happened is I was that typical newcomer that they say you shouldn't get in a relationship early sobriety. I did. Most of us don't do what we're told in here, you know, or that's been my experience. But some of us can do that and it be okay. And I was that typical one that at 3 years and 19 days, I celebrated my birthday, and I'll show you, I'll go kill me. And I started out at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I went to 3 different package stores, because by this time I'm legal to buy booze. But all the AAs in Rome are going to find me, you know. And it was a pretty miserable day. I ended up in Cartersville with my good old twin over there, Carla, and my cousin Amy, who's in this program today too. And we go back to what's comfortable. And it was a day of hell, and I was now yet a crying drunk at you know, in my early 20s. And everything they said would happened in a day. I almost went to jail, went into a blackout, come to that night on my grandmother's sofa, hoping it was a dream. And my good friend, the nurse from Cartersville ER that I'd helped, I went to her hoping she would feel sorry for me and tell me to go to treatment. And she told me to get my ass back to Rome and get up and go to work tomorrow, that I knew what to do. And God worked through that lady, because I wouldn't have heard that even from my sponsor at that time. It was only through her I heard that the most. And I'm here to tell you that lady committed suicide, and I couldn't help her about 5 or 6 years ago. She had had 8 years in this program, and it wasn't the same AA in North Georgia as it was in Rome, Georgia. And she become heavily involved in the church, and that worked for a long time until it didn't work, and she committed suicide. You know, I think about all the people who's gone on that's been sober that's helped me, and James Eberhard, Rome, Georgia, he was my first sponsor. He saved my life. He went through the steps. He didn't... A lot of men was jealous of James, but he had his own business. He started out mowing lawns. He ended up being a very successful ambulance service owner for many years and helped many women and a few men. The door was always open and the coffee pot was always on, and James helped me a lot. He told me, he said, number three, it's the God you don't understand. Move on. That saved my life. And he said, we have choices. You know, you can make something of yourself, Paula. You can't hang out in AA all day and not work and do anything. You've got to get a life, you know. And I felt like he talked to me like I was a piece of crap on the ground. But he saved my life. And a few years before he died, actually within a few months, I was coming through Georgia going back to Illinois, where I lived for many years. And he was in ICU at Redmond, and I got to see him 3 days before he died. And I got to thank him again for carrying the message to me and his wife, my spiritual sponsor from Savannah, Georgia. I got to reconnect with her 3 times in many states before she died in Savannah. I met her in a bathroom in Macon, Georgia at assembly, and she was a godsend. We had so much fun. And she passed on things like, her sponsor, she wasn't very educated. She come from the Bronx, and she was originally from Savannah and had moved up there and made a life at, from the age 13 because of how blacks was treated back in the day in Savannah. And she told me early on, she asked her sponsor, what does the word complacency mean? And she said, Lily, for you it means come place your ass in a chair and sit down and listen. I love it. So, like, I hear these voices of these people. And she said, if you're going to open up anything, open up the big book. You know? And I got to introduce Lily a couple years in Columbus, Ohio. What an honor. And to share that with her before she passed. We would go months and years sometimes without speaking, but the lady helped save my life. She's one reason I'm still here today. So then rock on. I have some time in sobriety. I'm back in Cartersville. I'm taking college classes, and then I have another partner, and we move away and travel, and I end up in central Illinois for about 12 or 13 years. That went real fine for a long time. I met a lot of good people, shared a lot of hospice-type meetings with old-timers. Did that in Rome, too. And so over time, you know, that town was great, but after a while, it just become not enough for me. I felt like I was one of the old-timers sitting in this little clubhouse where we, in Danville, Illinois, right near the Indiana line. And what happened is I quit smoking in 2009. It was literally like I got sober again. Literally, for this alcoholic. I started feeling things. I always, when you know better, you got to do better. But I enjoyed smoking for many, many years. Had lots of meetings in Waffle Houses, drinking lots of coffee. Enjoyed that for a long time. But then I was like, what the hell am I doing in Danville, Illinois? You know, it's like our perceptions change. My perception can change right now and 5 minutes from now. You know, my good friend Pinky from Cartersville, he always described it as I don't feel as an alcoholic, and my sponsor Kathy describes this well too, about there's something different in our brain. I don't always like to admit that, but it's true. I'm not like the average people I work with, you know. And like, I can love you to the nth degree, or I can hate you to the nth degree. You know, I'm an extremist. I am all or nothing, and that can get me in trouble in sobriety today sometimes. But, you know, they talk about this balance in sobriety. What the heck is a balance? The most balanced this alcoholic can be is going to meetings, trying to reach out to others, and not drinking and calling my sponsor. That's the most balance I've ever been. Now it's exercising 3 days a week if I can, and most times I do. And prayer and meditation, you know, that's important too, because that takes on different meaning if you stay around long enough. And so basically, after I quit smoking, I prayed about it. My sponsor from Douglasville, Georgia, had been my sponsor for a long time. And it worked for a long time. And she lived out in Fort Collins, Colorado, and I'd go out there. She'd come to speak at my birthday in Illinois one time. And so over the years, I fell in love with Colorado, and the AA was just amazing. And the women with sobriety was amazing. So then I was willing to go anywhere with my partner, but she's older than me, and she was teaching, and she was settled in this small school district, and we were real crazy early on and about killed each other and how we didn't survive. I had 2.5 years when I met her, and we stayed together. She was a newcomer and went against everything I believed in, but never say never in this program. And basically we had a lot of good years together, and then after I quit smoking, and slowly but surely we drifted apart. You know, she didn't quit smoking, and how she didn't kill me at that time, I don't know. Because I was a royal bitch, let me tell you. But we had already quit smoking in the house for a long time. But I was willing to move just about anywhere. I just needed out of that little town. I needed more. I needed more than the recovery could give me there. And I would drive over 40 miles. So having so many meetings so close now is, I drive from Cartersville to Hillside on a regular basis. That's nothing compared to, so it's so refreshing to be back home in North Georgia with meetings so accessible and not driving so long to get old timer meetings, you know, and lots of women sobriety going on. But I did that a long time and it worked. We bought a fixer-upper house. We did lots of projects and learned a lot what women could do and didn't know we could do, and it was fun. And I tried to help as many people as I could. I started several meetings. They didn't even do the CHIP system. I even started a meeting with the CHIP system there. Because, you know, it's not the AA Georgia way. You know, that's always the best way, wherever you get sober. But it worked for a long time. And then I just felt like my soul was dying. I reached a point. And I prayed and prayed. And my sponsor never tried to push it on me. But I really, you know, I love coming home to visit. And Carla got sober. I didn't really get to share a lot of meetings with her until I come back here. But I really wanted to go out west. I planned it. My ex helped me. I had a goal financially. I paid my car off. I paid a lot of debt that I did have. We transferred the house over into her name with agreement one day that I would get my part of the equity. And we did everything the grown-up way. But what happened in the process, I had lost several people I love: Lily, Lynn, James. My 18-year cat died. Just about killed me. And I used to think people were so ridiculous they would cry about these animals, you know. But so I had all these things going on, but I don't know what happened. I reached this level of spirituality that I'd never found within. And I love the books, Conversations with God. I don't know if you've never read that book. It's actually three books. It helped me get the courage to make the move I need to move. And I knew it would be the hardest thing I ever did, but I had to go. And I told my ex, you can stay or go, but I've got to go. And she didn't want to go, so I headed out west. And 4 days later, I turned around and come back home. And, of course, everybody knew I'd lost my mind. And I was already crying before I left. My nephew come to help me, you know. Of course, the big loser, you know. I mean, I just couldn't do it. I wanted to do it. I settled for Cheyenne, Wyoming. They paid more money for what I do. Oh, I got a little college degree, by the way, and I'm a productive member of society in healthcare. I meant to say that. I graduated with honors. And I'm a high school dropout, by the way. That's all because of AA and God. So basically, the International Roundup convention was coming up in Atlanta. I had planned that for 2 years. I had to get my stuff back to Illinois and home to Georgia. And my nephew said, "Aunt Paula, why don't you just come home?" And this grief took over me. I left a 8-year job. I left a 17-year relationship. I left a home of 12 years. But the grief took over about that relationship, and I literally could have been on 3 or 4 antidepressants, which I was not. And I come home, and the heat was amazing. And I got through the convention, and it was awkward when my sponsor, she supported me, and then she didn't because she's human. And she basically told me to get another sponsor. But I knew in Cheyenne, Wyoming, that everything had changed forever. Like, I knew that, but I didn't know how. And I knew all that would be hard, but I'm here to tell you, I hit a low at 20 years sober that I didn't know was possible. I didn't want to drink, but I didn't know how I would get through it. And I got some friends here. Katie's here. Some of these friends that I share today have gone through trauma in sobriety, and they've stayed sober. So through this pain, I was crazy. I didn't know what to do, but I had that fear of drinking, because that's what I do when a relationship ends. I want it to end, but I don't know how to handle it, because I'm a real alcoholic, you know. And of course, I wanted to run back home. She wouldn't let me. And thank God she didn't today. So I stayed on Carla's sofa, her cot, my mother's bedroom, my other sister's bedroom. And I thought I was going to die. But I knew all I could do was go to AA. I went to AA 7 days a week for 4 or 5 months and thought I was going to die. Because, like, I don't know how to explain that to you with 20 years. But it's like everything you think you know, you don't know. You know, and newcomers sounded good again, you know. And in turn, I met Kathy here. Paul told his story. And I got her number before the 20th birthday come up. And I liked what she shared when she picked up her 37th chip, I think, or 38th chip. And I asked her to be my temporary sponsor because I'm real picky, you know. And they kind of spoke my language, you know. And I thought, well, I got to have somebody. I'm dying here, you know. And she told me to meet her at Hillside. I'd went there many years ago, and we got together, and I told her all the bad about me in an hour, because she needs to know that. As my sponsor, she's got to know that more than anybody. All the bad. I haven't always behaved nicely in sobriety. I have showed my ass and luckily stayed sober. I have went to the edge of insanity many times. And God's grace, I didn't take a drink and I got back to sane thinking with sponsorship and AA. One thing I've never quit doing is going to AA. And my friend Jerry here speaks it so well. You know, you guys can have a meeting without me, but I can't have one without you. And meeting makers do make it. Not always, but it's a big part. I got to do more than make meetings. But if I'm not making meetings, I'm not hearing the truth about me. And my disease tells me false things. It wants to separate me from you, no matter how long I've been sober. You know, because my ism will make me think I don't need you guys. I've been a lot longer sober than I ever drank and did the other things I did. But in turn, you know, I just put one foot in front of the other. And I remember calling Kathy one time and saying, why do I keep doing this? You know, my goal was to try to make that relationship right, my part. And if it worked out, it worked out. If not, I had to do my part to not just abandon that relationship. And I'd call Kathy, and I remember one time calling her and crying, like, why do I keep doing this? And she laughed. She's like, I don't know. How's it working for you? And, like, then we laughed. It's like, I get it. I keep doing the same thing over and over in sobriety because I didn't want to be uncomfortable. I was comfortable in that relationship. I didn't know how to handle. It was like a half of me was gone. And how would I survive? You know, how would I do these simple things I've done? My whole world has changed without another human being. So in turn of all the pain and meetings, I got a fellowship of supporters here. We go dancing. We go bowling. We go see drag shows. You know, we've done a lot of fun things. And my life is so full today. And then I practice online dating. I'm running out of time. I got to get to this. And it was just entertainment, you know. I had no idea I'd meet somebody so quickly, really. Because, you know, I was still trying to work out this relationship in Illinois. That wasn't going nowhere. Right, sponsor? And so I was able to get my own place, get a job a month and a half later, which seemed like 10 years. I mean, the pride and ego to live with family. Oh, my God. I had a little bit of retirement savings, but I'd already blew through a lot of money in 4 days. I didn't need to keep being crazy. So I tried to be still for a minute. And my family really helped me, and Carla, and they said, it's going to be okay. And I just cried, you know. I got on a mood elevator. I still take it, by the way, Chinese herb. Because I always had this thing once a month with hormones, so that helped me a little bit. And I've always tried to exercise since I quit smoking pretty faithful, and that helped. But then, you know, we went hiking, we just did stuff, and I stayed busy. For me to take a nap was a big deal. I was always going, and then I got some sponsees. And, you know, the beauty of the program takes over. We continue to get out of ourselves, and and the, it seemed not so painful anymore. And then I met my wife over here, Teresa, online. So this online thing can be good, really. And all my friends thought I'd lost my mind because it said London, but I thought, you know what, I could have a friend in London. I didn't know that that she was going to come here 7 months later and we were going to marry, and it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. I never really knew about this, if there's a such thing as reincarnation. I never dismissed it or judged people, but I knew right away when we met. 6 or 7 days later, we did the email. It was just chit-chat, and then we Skyped, because what little experience I had, it was just entertainment. All these people are crazy online, you know. So I thought she was probably crazy, too, and she wasn't. And she was real. And this Skype date we had, which thought would be an hour or so, ended up being 5.5 hours long. And the magic took place, and she was going to come here, but it worked out that I went there. I didn't even understand about a passport and all that, because, like, I'm a Cartersville girl, you know. I'd been to Mexico, but I'd never, that's about as far. So I got it in a hurry, and then some ladies at Trivia talked to my sponsor. I'll never forget this. And she's like, are you sure you got like a plan B? You know, because there was a misunderstanding about her brother and stuff, I think. And I'm like, Kathy, I'm going to London and I'm staying with Teresa. And everything's okay. But I will find another place nearby just because you recommended it, because you never know about who you meet. And so basically I met her, and we knew we didn't want to do long distance, and she come here in October and met everybody. That was the end of August. End of August I went there. She come here in October. I went there in December, and January she come here and we got married. You know, alcoholics don't mess around. But you know, I was never officially married, and I said, I'm going to London. I told my mom, and she's like, you've lost your mind, you know. But my mom always told me, when you get through the hurt, you're going to be okay. And my mother don't have this program, but she was right, you know. And, you know, I felt bad, and I had to tell my ex. And when she was ready to try to work it out, it was a little too late, and I wish her well. And she's got 20 years sober as of June, and she's, I don't know how she's doing, but the best she can. But we talk on some occasions. She's just got the house sold, and we're going to tie up the ends of all that soon if it goes through next month. But so, you know, I look back about all that, and it's just incredible. You couldn't make this up. I could write a book about it. And how I always desired to have someone to pray with me and be that soulmate. I never really claimed to have had all that before, but I have that today. She supports my AA, because I never knew how it would be with somebody not in AA, and she supports my craziness. She puts up with me, which is a big deal sometimes, and we had a little adjustment the first few months of her being here, and I never knew that I would have somebody so beautiful to support me in my life. So I'm here to tell you, if you're single and you're wondering about that, if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. And next month we'll get to go on our next trip together. It'll be my third new country. Can you imagine that? You know, like, I always wanted to travel, and I wanted somebody to travel with me, but I didn't know it was possible to meet somebody that has already been to 17 different countries before me, and that has a love for it too. And we're going to get to see our Italian family next month. We finally found out last week. We've been held up by the great immigration process up until last week for the next step. So we could travel out of the country. And, you know, it's like, she's like the best thing that ever happened to me. And I would have never guessed 3.5 years ago that I would be standing up here telling you that. And if we have a fight today, she's an angel. It's usually my fault. you know, even though she's not perfect. But I've come to understand that a lot of people can have a spiritual program and not need Al-Anon or AA. What a concept, you know. Some people just have these coping skills. And they know how to handle things sanely. And when my sponsor's not around or available, you know, I run things by Teresa. And found out recently that my dad, and I'm going to wrap it up here, I promise, he may have lung cancer, all indications. We haven't confirmed it yet, but Kenneth Stone and Redmond has seen spots, and he's been kind of doing his own thing, and he'll find out later this month. So, you know, I told my dad what I thought about him in the 90s and that he needed to know that I knew a lot of stuff and that I forgive him best of my ability, because it's for me, you know. It's like not for him. But, like, when you tell people that your dad may have lung cancer and they give you this... But, see, my relationship is quite different. We were always the adult and he was the child. And he's been sober without AA for about 5 years. And he did help me move my stuff back to Illinois because I flew him to Colorado. And it's a strange thing because he's sort of there today in his own way, you know. And it come to me with my little angel by my side that maybe I need to remind him that I forgive him again. Because he finally got full veterans benefits. About 3 or 4 months ago, my grandmother would have been so pleased. She wanted that all her life. And so when I think about what she would want for him, I can have compassion. And I can have that uncomfortable conversation that I had about 3 weeks ago with him. He come by. It was unplanned. He called. He needed us to put in phone numbers for his new phone. And Teresa sort of disappeared and upstairs. And basically, I was able to tell him what I thought about years ago. And I said, you may not need this, but your health may need to hear this. I forgive you for all. And, of course, his denial and his illusion was, like, astonishing. Like, what do you mean? What do you mean, the father that you never could be to me? I forgive you. And I reminded him of three painful memories that you think about sometimes when he's an asshole on the phone and I don't want to talk to him. And I reminded him that sometimes he's a difficult dry drunk and he's not easy to talk to. And of course, in his own way, he made amends too. But I did that to, you know, try to help him because it's the right thing to do. Did I absolutely jump up and down and want to do that? No. But see, God gives me these opportunities to help others that in turn, I'm sure it's going to help me one day, because that's sobriety for me. I can't hold on to that anger and you know, the hate. You'll never forget. But the conversation could have went really south because he was traumatized in Vietnam, very much so. But it didn't go south, and it ended on a good note. So, you know, there again, I'm trying to still walk this program in my daily affairs with the ones that it's toughest with. And for that, I'm truly grateful. And I'm going to end and read this pamphlet, The Member's Eye View, if you've never read it. My first sponsor, it was his first pamphlet. It's basically telling professionals what AA is about, and I love this. On page 11, it says, I am personally convinced that the basic search of every human being from the cradle to the grave is to find at least one other human being before whom he can stand completely naked, stripped of all pretense or defense, and trust that person not to hurt him, because that other person has already stripped himself naked too. This lifelong search can begin to end with a first AA encounter. And that I truly believe I have had. I have it today. And I wish you all have it. And thank you, Bill, for having me.